Well, I do a tech podcast poorly named the NoSillaCast. It's my name spelled backwards, and it's designed so that no one can find me with search engine optimization. And it's a tech podcast with a what my tagline is, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. And I've been doing it for coming up on 19 years in May. My big thing is I've never missed a week, which is pretty amazing. And but it's a generalized tech podcast, mainstream, but I fold accessibility stuff into it just because, like, it's super fun. It's really interesting. And I got interested in accessibility at a very young age, and it just sort of permeated into the show. And I think you said it when we were talking yesterday that now I collect blind friends.
Yes, that's right. You're collecting blind people. And I like that.
When we were talking yesterday, you'd say, oh, do you know Shelley Brisbane? Of course I know Shelley Brisbane.
Yeah, okay, you've got Shelley.
Of course
good.
I know Michael Babcock.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah, you've got Michael, right?
It's like
good.
Pokemon.
Marty Sobo.
You've got to catch us all. We're easy to catch.
That's true. We're very easy to catch. You've got one
Hang
here.
On. Can I just say, I feel we need the applause sound effect here. You haven't missed a week in 19 years.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
That is fantastic.
No, it wasn't always solo. When I go on vacations, I have people like Bart Bouchatz and Alistair Jenks who take over the show. Alistair's in New Zealand and Bart is in Ireland. He's a Belgian from Ireland, which is why I started on that. So people help me, but the show has not missed a week, which is like unheard of.
And how did you get into the world of accessibility?
Well, I didn't start collecting blind people at a young age. That was later. It was my hobby developed. When I was about 11 years old, I read a book called Follow My Leader by James Garfield. And it was about a little boy who gets blinded by a firecracker. And by the way, I never go near firecrackers because of that. And in the book, he eventually comes to terms with the fact that he's blind and he goes to a Braille school and he learns Braille. And they wrote out the Braille alphabet in the book. I thought, well, that's like learning a secret code. I want to do that. So I went and I got a piece of cardboard and a punch out of my dad's toolbox, and I made myself a little Braille display, I guess you would call it, and I taught myself Braille as a little kid.
That is so impressive. Can you teach me? I'm 50 and blind, and I don't know it. That's incredible.
Well, y'all were talking about a little handheld device to do Braille with that sounded like maybe I could force myself to actually learn it, but I didn't do it. But then as I got into podcasting, a couple of blind people wrote to me, and that's when I realized, well, wait a minute, podcasting is to blind people as podcasting is to sighted people. It is the exact same thing. So yeah. Why not? I mean, that seems like a perfectly natural thing to be as inclusive as possible. And then I started getting interested in voiceover as I started to know people like Daryl Shandrow and Slough. And I thought, maybe I should try to teach myself voiceover. And I got the crazy idea, what if I forced myself to do a tech talk at Macworld blindfolded? And by giving myself that deadline, and I took my collection of blind friends, and I had about a dozen by that time in my set, and I said, hey, I'm going to need your help because I need to learn this, and I need to learn it fast, and I need to learn it well, and I need to learn how to really focus down what I'm going to try to demo. And I remember Slough telling me, oh, yeah, it's easy. You're going to be able to do this. It's going to be great. And about, I don't know, a month and a half in, I called him up and I said, this isn't easy. This is hard. And he just started laughing. And I said, why did you say that? And he says, because if I told you how hard it was, you never would have started.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not. It does involve you wanting to throw your phone and everything you own out of a window.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the phone I find not trivially easy or anything, but I find it, I was able to conquer what I wanted to conquer with it. But, you know, trying to do stuff on the Mac was, wow. Mm. I did sadly crash and burn in my presentation. I ended up having to pull the blindfold partway through because I did the thing they tell you never to do. I changed one thing right before I went on stage, and it was to put my presentation on the desktop, and I got it stuck to my cursor. And it was like I was walking around with, like, I had my foot nailed to the ground. I was walking in circles, and I was flinging open folders. And my husband was there, and he was really worried I was going to open, like, a medical folder or financial or something. And, but the audience was very, very kind. They said, well, you taught us how hard it was. And I said, well, that's not what I was trying to teach, but okay.
Yeah, but those, I mean, you're very brave to even attempt it. The trouble I think you would have is that you have that option to jump out of it and back into your comfort zone, right? I mean, we haven't got that choice, so we got to stick with it.
So I'm really glad I did that talk because it gave me kind of the fundamentals, and I would put myself as maybe a low intermediate, high beginner at voiceover. But what it gave me was the skill to be able to test apps and websites and services for voiceover when I'm doing reviews. So, now, I don't always remember to do it. In fact, I got a message on Mastodon today because I talked about the Ember mugs, and they said, you forgot to test it for accessibility. It's like, oh, they're right. I'm good enough at voiceover that I can tell you if it's not accessible. Like if I run into a brick wall where it says, yeah, that whole area is empty, well, I know that that's not accessible. So I can let you know. And I also, but I can't tell you if it's good accessible. You know, I can tell if all the buttons are unlabeled. Okay, this person didn't even try. Or sometimes what I find is maybe a bunch of buttons are labeled, but then there's a couple missing. I'll write to the developer and say, hey, you forgot these two. And 9 times out of 10, they come back and go, my app's accessible? Cool. How'd I do that? But it gives me the opportunity to encourage companies to do that. And then I usually send them a couple of my blind friends to help test. I've got one guy, Scott Howell, is great about testing apps. And so I usually trick him into talking to people. And I just feel like I can help accelerate things and tell people, don't even bother to check this out, or maybe you want to try it because I think it's accessible.
That's so important, though. We get so excited if accessibility is mentioned outside of our little bubble. If it's mentioned in the mainstream at all, we lose our minds because it is so important. And even if it's like as easy as at the end of a review or summing up a review, you say, oh, by the way, I found that it was mostly accessible using VoiceOver or not. It's just so nice to have that thought about. It makes a huge difference.
I did my podcast is a little bit weird. I write blog posts and then my podcast is me reading those blog posts. And it's not as bad as it sounds because I write the way I read and I've been doing it for 19 years. So it's very fluid for me to read my own writing and it sounds almost natural. Maybe a little rehearsed because there's no ums and ahs because I'm reading. But one of the ones I did recently in written text and in the podcast was I explained how I test for accessibility. I wanted to give like some very rudimentary things people could try on their own to see if they could test for accessibility, just to try to increase the knowledge of people. That was one. The other thing I did recently that I'm really excited about, I do video tutorials for the Screencast Online paid for podcast service. It's an Apple-centric video tutorial service, and it's highly popular in the Apple community. And one of the ones I did was adding image descriptions in social media. And I walked through each of the different apps like Facebook and Instagram and Mastodon. And I even showed using Be My Eyes to write the captions for Mona. Or for captions for the photo, but then obviously going straight into Mona, it adopts those captions. And after I did it, I was feeling really good about it. And I realized this is really a public service announcement. So I talked to the people that run Screencast Online, Lee Garrett runs it. And I said, I think this is important enough, we should give it away. And he watched it and said, spot on, let's give it away for free. So I've got it out there that just trying to get people aware of, like, it used to be really hard, but now it's really pretty easy if you can figure out where they've hidden the button. And so by giving people like 7 or 8 different apps, I was able to maybe give them a way to learn what to look for if they get it into one they can't find.
And what's the feedback to your shows like? Because you're not aiming your show at a blind or low vision audience, right? You're aiming at a mainstream audience. So what's the reaction?
I think people have just begun to be educated about it and understand that it is something for the blind. But I'll often just refer to screen readers in general so that it's a little – or accessibility for the blind. I throw that in. I don't just say voiceover. And what I've started noticing is like I have a Slack community and virtually every image anybody puts up in Slack has captions on it. And this is a fairly small community, but there's a couple of people who are blind, and why wouldn't we, just in case? And it's an open community. So I've started noticing that. And then I have a Bart Bouchatz I mentioned earlier. He and I do a show called Programming by Stealth. He's teaching the audience to program through an audio podcast. And when we were going through learning HTML, he went out of his way to study all of the area labeled by stuff or aria labeled by stuff. So when he taught us from the ground up that we would always make our stuff accessible. And that was just part of the fabric of it. And it wasn't a separate thing. It was just that's how you program for the web. You program accessibly. And so I've just started noticing other people other than me pushing it and making it part of the fabric of what we talk about on the shows.
You're heading off to CSUN.
Yeah.
And what is it you're expecting to see? Because you've been before, right? This is not your first rodeo. This is not your first time that blind people are scared because they're being collected at the door by Alison. So what do you find? And what have you been finding at CSUN in the past? What have you been surprised about?
Well, this is I tried to ask Donald Burr the first time he tricked me into going to it when it was up at near the LA airport. And back then it was in an area that was way too small. So it was basically like watching bumper cars in a really, really loud arena because every single booth was blasting sound because people can't see. There were dogs, there were wheelchairs, there were canes, and everybody was running into each other. All you could hear was, excuse me, bang, 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 bang.
Yes.
Now it's much, much nicer. It's out in Anaheim at one of the convention centers, and it's two big exhibit halls. There are classes, and one year we snuck into a couple of, not snuck, but we were allowed to go in. We went into a couple of classes, and it was really great, but I really only am able to make time to go for one day. So we go into the exhibit halls, and we walk around and interview people. And we don't just focus on things for blind accessibility. We look into all different things, and I've just been amazed at some of the things I never even thought about. Like there's a lot of tools for people with autism to be able to communicate. And there's physical accessibility things. It's just like a room full of toys. You know, it's really cool. One thing that is very interesting is how prevalent Android things are because Android lets you reskin. I remember last year there was a guy who had an app that you could hold up to a traffic light and it would tell you whether or not the light was red, green, or yellow. And it would also give you vibrating feedback on whether or not you were walking between the lines. So you hold it up against your chest and you could see whether you could cross. Or sense, I should say. And that was really, really cool. So I never know what I'm going to get. The weirdest one, the CIA had a booth and we walked up and we started talking to this woman and I said, would you be able to do an interview? And she lost her ever loving mind because she thought we were already recording her. And I could not calm her down. I was like, no, that's why I asked you. And I mean, we finally just had to back away because she wouldn't stop yelling at me. It was really weird. I said, why are you here?
I remember
I get to the CIA, right? But
I remember this because I remember reading in the exhibitor list the CIA, and we're talking here Central Intelligence Agency, were at CSUN. And I remember thinking, okay, you know, there's that part of me that's thinking, right, they're trying to get blind people to be spies. This is a good idea. I think this makes sense because we can blend in. No one notices us. We can blend in. And
or ignores us.
Well,
that's
exactly.
Even better.
They just ignore us.
We're invisible.
We could sit in any conversation, just, you know, get out a piece of Braille paper, read it upside down. They don't care. And that'd be fine. But
cut eye holes in newspapers. Useless
well,
on every
fun.
Level.
Yeah, exactly. That. No need for them, really. You could just use a regular newspaper, in fairness. But, you know, this is... Did you get any sense of why they were there? What
recruiting.
But is that what it is? They are actually looking to recruit people? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not everybody who works at the CIA is a spy.
Well, you say that. You don't know that, though, do you?
Yeah.
I do not know that. You are correct, sir.
I am no conspiracy theorist, but...
that is the strangest thing ever.
It does fascinate me. That does fascinate me.
Has there ever been a product there you've seen at CSUN or an app or hardware, software, whatever it may be, and you thought, you know what? I could use that. I want that myself. Has that ever happened yet?
Not really. I did have some FOMO about a set of backpacks that attached to a wheelchair, a company we interviewed at, I think it was actually at CES, not at CSUN. We always go to the accessibility booths in CES too. I remember thinking those were really cool, but I didn't have a wheelchair to put them on. So That's as close as I could get. We interviewed a guy last year who has a hiking cane. He lives in Sonoma, which is a beautiful hiking country in, I'm going to say Utah, I think. And the guy likes to hike, and so he's got a cane with a big ball on the end of it that rolls and allows him to, you know, catch himself in little crevices and stuff. And terrifying, but that looked pretty cool. And I am unstable on my pins at my age, but it was still pretty cool.
Yeah, because a lot of this tech is kind of built for the intended user, right? It's not really something that's mainstream. That's the whole point of it. It must be fascinating, though, when you go along, because there must be points when you look at this tech and think, you know, my goodness, I wouldn't even have thought something like that would exist.
Yeah.
But when I learned it existed, I now totally understand why.
Definitely. I talked to a guy whose son had some kind of big problem with his throat, and it caused physical look problems, and he had trouble speaking, and so his dad wrote an app for a tablet that put pictures on screen that would allow, if the kid tapped on the right picture, it would speak in his father's voice. And he told the story of how the first time his son, at about 17, went into a fast food restaurant, and he walked up to the counter, and he plopped the tablet down, and he tapped out what he wanted to eat for lunch. And he said he's pretty weird looking because of the problems with his neck and throat. And this beautiful young woman behind the counter put her elbows on the table and her chin in her hands and said, "Wow, that's amazing." And it was like the best day of this kid's life. You know, such a great inspirational story. Again, I wouldn't have thought of that needing to exist until I talked to him. You know, one thing I didn't mention yet is my mother went blind. She had macular degeneration, and I have dry macular degeneration myself. May never turn into wet, you know, knock on all pieces of wood I can find. But, you know, sometimes I feel like I might be looking into my own future when I look at things. But I remember the reason I brought up my mom is I remember a great story about my dad. My dad loved my mother to the moon and back. There was nothing on earth he wouldn't do for her. And after she'd started to lose her vision, they had a company come in with, it was a company called VTech that had one of the magnifiers. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the old strip chart recorders, but that's not the right word. I'm forgetting the right word. Anyway, it's a little table thing that you set maybe a magazine or a piece of paper on, and then you slide it around and it magnifies up on this big screen.
Yes,
and my mother was just blown away at how that would help her to be able to read. And the guy started packing the device up and he said, "Oh no, you're leaving that here." My dad said, "I'm not letting you leave without that because I want my wife to have this today. I don't care what you charge me for it. We're buying that." And that was an inspirational thing, love story, but also about the accessibility tools, and always interested in that. And my mother loved tech; she loved accessible tech. I had her on my show one time. She's passed now, but I had her on my show one time where she talked about a tape player she got from the Braille Institute that allowed her to listen to tapes. And so she was an inspiration as well. She was really bad at tech, though. But she loved it.
You know, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun with what you do, because, you know, I hear a lot of podcasters, they're obsessed these days with AI. And in the mainstream world, that's everyone's talking about AI and the value of AI, what it can do. But it sounds like you want to talk about that too, but you kind of want to just shine a light on all this other great stuff that's going on. It is a great conversational topic, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's endless. In terms of AI, one of the ways I was able to keep my almost 19 year running streak was because of AI. I occasionally lose my voice, and usually I can, you know, gravel voice my way through. But one year, Sunday, it's every Sunday night it comes out, I was unable to talk. I could not talk. But I found 11labs.io, and I trained it on my own voice, and I had it do the podcast. So it's creepy, but it's technically sort of me. But since I write everything out up front, that works great, right?
Mm.
The other thing I've used AI for is I use a service called Auphonic, which levels my audio because I have different speakers or I record at different times. And it also, it does a whole bunch of other really cool stuff. But they've recently, the developer George has added the automatic transcripts. And so some of the stuff I do as conversations, like specifically like programming by stealth is a conversation, or I might have a guest on. The transcript has every single word. So even if you don't, I don't have a blog post, now I have a transcript of that. And so it, that makes it more accessible to people who can't, maybe can't listen and need to be able to read. So there's pretty much no angle I can't get to for with on accessibility.
So you're at CSUN today, and you're going to be there for the day, and you're mm-hmm. going to be having lots of fun. So we're going to hear the results of that. What, over the next few weeks on your podcast?
Yeah, the way my husband does the videos and then produces an audio file from that. So the audio will be in my podcast, but we don't like to do, you know, interview. We like to just sprinkle it out. And it kind of makes my life easier for weeks after a show that I don't have to write as much content for the podcast. So that's another advantage to me. So depending on how many different recordings we get, it could be a couple months from now by the time the last one comes out. We've just finished, we're almost done with our CES coverage from early January, but that was a case where we had like 38 interviews, so that's why they've kind of ended up overlapping this time. So don't expect rapid massive content, but there will be content every week for quite a few weeks still after.
And
this.
You've very kindly offered some of that content to us as well, so we look forward to hearing some of your conversations on.
Yeah, that was
show
my bribe to get
well.
On the show.
Yeah, and that
it worked
well.
Yes, listen, well done.
Anything that makes our life easier, we'll take. That's generally how it works. And, you know, you're closer to it than I am. I'm just going to say it. You're closer. So that's fair.
Yes.
Alison, it has been wonderful talking to you. Tell people how to find your podcast and content.
Well, the best way to go is to go to podfeet.com, also poorly named, podfeet.com. I don't know. And I worked hard on naming these things. At least it's only 7 characters, so it's got that going for it. But one of my taglines is everything good starts with podfeet.com. If you want to find my videos, podfeet.com/YouTube. You want to go to the live chat room, podfeet.com/live. I mean, all those kinds of things are available to you. So, and from there, you can find Programming by Stealth and Chit Chat Across the Pond and everything.
And might we get an invite on, you know, any of that at any point? Just, you know,
no.
Wondering.
No. Okay, no. Sean maybe, but
yes,
no,
thank you.
It would be fun. I could, and when I wrote to you, I said I think we should find some hijinks.
Yes, I agree. Well, I think we started the hijinks here. Let's continue.
Can I say one more nice thing about Stephen?
Please.
No, sorry, we're out of time.
I think one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you was when you were talking about Humanware and the. Humane pin,
yes,
and
yes.
The inaccessibility of that, and you talked a little bit about not ranting about the fact that it was inaccessible, not pounding your tiny little fist and being angry about it, and because, as you said, my father always said, you catch more flies with honey, and I really resonated to that. Is when I'm making my blind people collections, I tend to veer towards the ones who are like that. I have met people who are very angry all the time, and every problem is an 11, and I need to go yell at somebody about it. And I never send them to developers to help test apps because I know they're just going to be snotty, like, this doesn't work, instead of, hey, this could be improved by. So I resonated with that comment and the warmth of the attitude here on the show, plus the snarky sarcasm. Those are the two things that go really well together to me.
I mean, I'll take all of that. I think that is lovely what you've said. I'm going to, you know, pick you up a little bit on the tiny little fist. It's an average size.
No, it's not.
But other than that, I would say thank you so much for those kind words. I'm so glad you reached out, and I want you to have a great time at CSUN. Say hello to all your blind collection of people. It's like Sylvanian families, but, you know, blind people.
It's more like the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, if
that's
you ask
another
me.
Way to think about it, yes.
Alison the blind catcher.
Okay, we're going to get flack from somebody for this.
Oh, more than likely. Alison, thank you so much. Come back soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Alison.